We're doing the Jewish home, and I want to begin with Mr. Platnik. You guys ever heard of Mr. Platnik?
Platnik Diamond.
Oh. Okay, so Mrs. Platnik was once at an event, and she's all decked out, and the woman sitting next to her says, ma'am, I can't help but admire the beautiful ring you're wearing. And the woman says, well, that's the famous Platnik Diamond. And she looks at it and she says, the Platnik Diamond, I never heard of that. She says, yes, what you see in my ring is the Platnik Diamond. The only problem with the Platnik Diamond is that it comes with the Platnik Curse. Platnik Curse, what's the Platnik Curse? Well, the Platnik Curse is Mr. Platnik. So, wow. So, they say beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But what we're going to discuss today is about how marriage is in the eye of the beholder. There's a story about a church in the middle of the woods that the priest saw that it's going to close down, and they weren't sure what to do. So down the road, there was a synagogue, there was a rabbi there. They decided they'll go consult with the rabbi. So Brother James and Brother John and Brother Benedict and Brother Matthew, they all hop on their wagon and ride down the road, and they knock on the rabbi's door, and they say, Rabbi, we want to consult with you. We're having a bit of an issue. We don't see right now how our place of prayer is going to last, and we're literally thinking that we're on the verge of closing down, and we were wondering if you could give us some advice. So the rabbi stands there and strokes his beard and says, look, I'm not sure what to tell you. The only thing I could say is that one of you is going to be the Messiah. So the priest stand there and listen to the rabbi. They thank him for his kind words and leave. And as they're headed back, each one starts thinking, boy, the wise rabbi said one of us is going to be the Messiah. I wonder who it's going to be. Maybe it's Brother Benedict. He's always so kind and gentle. But then again, Brother Matthew always takes care of all the stray cats, and he's always thinking how to help people and starting all these projects. And each one starts looking at the other one and thinking, maybe he's going to be the Messiah. And they start treating one another with tremendous respect and reverence. And the spirit that goes around, people start noticing when they come to visit, this, there's something special going on here. And people are attracted, and they want to come more and more. And by the end of 2-3 years, the place is thriving because people were drawn to that behavior. When you view someone in a positive light, so you treat them differently. And a lot of the issues we have in marriage are really a question of what our attitude is and not what the other person is. There's one of the big rabbis of the previous generation, of our generation, really just passed away a few years ago. I think I'm allowed to say who it is. It's pretty well known. Okay. I guess there's nothing wrong by keeping it private, so we won't mention who it is. His wife, every time she got pregnant, this is a rabbi you all know of. I mean, it's not someone far out. It's someone some of you even merited to see. So every time his wife got pregnant, she'd be on bed rest for 9 months. She miscarried numerous times, and so whenever she was pregnant, the doctors forced her to be on bed rest for 9 months. So you could imagine, here this man is writing the halachic responsa for tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, and he's got to spend much of his married life running around doing diapers, taking the kids to school, from school, feeding them lunch, feeding them supper, cleaning them up. You could imagine a person looks at his wife and says, I married a lemon. And there's a tremendous desire to think that. It's one of the most common claims that I hear. Almost a week doesn't go by that I don't hear that, where people say, you know, what's she doing all day? I'm out of the house working. What's she doing all day? Or how come he can't make supper? I'm working my head off all day. Why can't he come home and help with supper? Why can't he come home earlier? Why can't he leave later? Why can't he take the kids? Why? Yeah, okay, there's life. And the frustrations we have with life, it's very tempting to let those frustrations out at our spouse when it's not always our spouse. It's very common that when a child has an illness or a parent has an illness, so then the issues play themselves out against the spouse, when in fact it's not the spouse. And sometimes the spouse has an illness and we get upset at them. And it's not their fault. Did they choose it? Did they have control over it? And so we very often have to realize that our frustrations are, in truth, frustrations with life and not frustrations with our partner. This rabbi, whose wife was on forced bed rest, so one day he comes home and his wife is lying in bed. And as he's talking to her, he starts moving things all around the room. And he's moving this cabinet, he's moving this chair and this piece of furniture and that piece of furniture. And finally she says, honey, what are you doing? So he says to her, well, you're in bed and you can't see what's going on outside, right? Because there's no window in front of you. But the window that's just behind you, you'd be able to see. And it's snowing outside. And here in Jerusalem, it doesn't often snow. So I figured you'd enjoy seeing the snow. So I'm rearranging the furniture so that you'll have a mirror in front of you, so you'll be able to see the snow falling behind you. That's giant. That's what I'm saying. You know, his head wasn't in the snow. You know, that's not what he was thinking about. But he knew what would make her happy. So it's not a question of what's wrong with her. Why is it that pregnancy after pregnancy, we have to deal with this? No, this is what we were granted. So this is what we'll deal with. There's a story, a famous Hasidic story. One of the rebbes was a hunchback. So he met his wife. In those days, you dated once, right? The parents decided who your wife was going to be, and she said to him, he said to her, "Look, you seem displeased that I'm a hunchback." So she said, "Very." So he said, "Look, I'll tell you the truth. 40 days before baby's born, they announce in heaven who he's going to be married to. And it was announced that I'd be married to you, and that you would be a hunchback. And I said, no, don't make her a hunchback, make me a hunchback. But if it really bothers you, I could undo it." You choose.
What is a hunchback?
Bent over.
On the back. Yeah, I got it.
So sometimes we have to realize that if we would have a different attitude, we would view the whole situation differently. She suddenly viewed the situation differently. There's a story Rav Avram Shapiro once told me. There was this guy who was focused in his learning, and he didn't know what was going on, and he's married to his wife for 20-some-odd years, and she's a hunchback, and he doesn't notice it. And after about 25, 30 years, they're about to marry off their last son. He's getting into his suit and he turns to his wife and he says, "Honey, you know you have this thing on your back?" So she looks at him and says, "Chaim, this is how Hashem made women. All women are like this." Smart woman. She realized that in 30 years, he only realized now, so it'll take him another 30 years to realize this is now Hashem made women, right? Okay, if I'm his wife, and he looks at her and he says, "Oh, thank you for telling me." Okay. So, a lot of life is a question of perspective. And we have to realize that. If a person walks into his home and thinks, I lucked out. I used to say, I wish I had a long white beard and a whole bunch of Hasidim standing around when people come and have marriage issues. Because if I could take the wife and tell her, I just want you to know, in Shemayim they told me, your husband is getting a front row seat. I don't know where you're going to be, but this is what they told me. And then 5 minutes later, pull her husband in and tell him, look, I don't know what your issue is, but you should know in Shemayim they told me, your wife is getting a front row seat. I don't know where you're going to sit, but I can tell you where she's seated. Well, if each one could only look at the other one that way, then I believe many, many of the issues would be resolved. Because if I only looked at them as a positive person, then I'd view everything differently. Half of our issue stems from our own attitude. And it's very hard to see it that way. You know, a woman comes in and says, of course marriage is difficult. My husband's a liar. And when he lies, we get into trouble. And it's not only we get into trouble, then he secludes himself. And it could take years till I pull him out of seclusion. Am I supposed to remain married to such a man? Yes. That man you all heard about, his name is Adam. The wife is named Eve. And Adam doesn't tell Eve the exact truth about the forbidden fruit. He tells her, don't eat it and don't touch it, right? And then they all get into trouble because he exaggerated what God said. So she touches it and she sees, hey, she was pushed into it and she sees nothing happened. So of course she assumes I could eat it and nothing will happen. He's a liar. And then for 130 years, Adam secludes himself, 130 years. Their marriage lasted all of one day. Am I supposed to remain married to such a person? The answer is yes. This is God's plan. Don't tell me, am I supposed to be married to such a person? Make it work. He takes me on journeys. I have to be dedicated to his goals. You know, sometimes I get kidnapped because I'm going along with him, otherwise known as Sarah. How am I supposed to be married to such a person? He's going to places he doesn't even have a parnasa. God's talking to him. Okay, but where do I fit into all this? Okay, but when you share his vision, when you say it's our journey, so then it's a different life. And so let's lay out the points we're talking about. Attitude. I lucked out. Attitude. She is a tremendous person. Point number two, attitude. My frustrations are with life. My frustrations aren't with her. If I can recognize that it's what life's dishing out at me, then I can make it work. Am I compromising or is life compromising me? And the third point is a point which we've touched on in the past and we'll touch on again in the future. And that is the idea of it's us, it's not me. If I could view life as it's us, so then it's just a question of how it played itself out, like that Hasidic Rebbe told his wife. One of us was going to be a hunchback. It's us it was decided on. You know, there's a terrible story, a true story, but a terrible story about a couple that were engaged, and between the engagement and the wedding, the wife was in a terrible car accident and she burned half her face. Now she's not coming to the wedding with the same face that he got engaged to. What does he do now? So these are challenges of life. You get married and suddenly you discover your spouse is not who you thought they were. They have weaknesses you were unaware of earlier.
How did they get married?
Yeah, I know two stories like that. One has a better ending than the other. No, they both got married. Just the one where her face was half burnt, they remained married for a long time. And the other story where she had an epileptic attack the week before her wedding and she fell down and scratched up her whole face. Her whole face was black and blue on the wedding. She died of an epileptic attack with all the kids at home. It's a terrible story. But her husband, a tremendous tzaddik, approached it with the attitude, this is our life. This isn't, okay, this is, if this is what's been decided for us, then we are going to make that work. Uri, yeah.
What do you do in that situation if you're engaged to someone and their face gets burned off and all of a sudden you're like, what do I do now? Like, if you won't be able to carry on marital relations, if the face is like so burnt that you'll be like, pulse.
I wish you that that should not be your issue. And when a person has that issue, then it's not something you can address in 10 minutes of a class. Meaning whatever I'd say now, even if it were correct, I don't think it would do justice to the issue.
What about the situation, the examples you gave, call it acts of God, and obviously the person should try and rise to the challenge, but what about it where information has been withheld from you? Let's say the person had a history of epilepsy now and then, didn't say anything. Is the husband supposed to say, it's God's doing and we're in this together? Or is it more appropriate to say, if the relationship is based on trust and it started on a falsehood, I should not pursue it, follow through it?
I think every instance a person should consult. There are instances that go one way and instances that go the other way, and the first person and last person to decide is the person himself, but there has to be a consultation in between that first and last person. Meaning the first person who's going to call the shot is the person himself, and the last person who's going to have to decide what he's doing with his life is that person himself. But before that first and last person, there has to be a consultation, because very often, almost always, you're going to get married and discover things that you wish you would have known earlier. And it's very hard to define when it's something that's as far out as you think it is.
Deliberately withheld, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, deliberately withheld. But I've seen numerous stories where information was deliberately withheld, and I forced the information out. I became aware of the information. And in truth, it had no relevance to their married life, which is great, right? I had to do what I had to do. But I'm just saying, the fact that you discover information that was deliberately withheld is not in and of its own right a reason that's it, this cannot work. It's a reason to go and ask a question and figure out how you move forward from here. And I don't think there's one formula that will cover everything. In each instance, you should consult, and of course, it's going to be the person's own decision. But I wouldn't be quick to come to a decision.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about real extreme situations. I'm talking about people who had really serious psychological issues, and even so.
It goes back to almost the other class we talked about before this, where, you know, if it's in Hashem's hands and you're meant to marry...
Oh, no, so I didn't say that. I didn't say don't get divorced. Right. I just said make sure to consult, because sometimes we're quick to react, and sometimes there are other ways to deal with it. All I'm saying is a person shouldn't be quick to react. I've seen numerous marriages end in divorce because really information was improperly withheld, and I'm not so convinced that they did right in all those instances. Meaning, even though the person was dead wrong for withholding that information, I'm just saying things are not always as bad as they seem when you first hear it.
A relationship of trust can still be built, is what you're saying.
A relationship of trust can still be built. I think it'll require work.
Yeah. Well, that's
right.
More work. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Just a second. Yeah.
I was just going to say, because you were saying the couples you were mentioning stay together, and plan, and she's on bed rest. Sometimes people just make mistakes. Just as if an Ezra couldn't get a business going, some people make mistakes in who they choose. And it's not God's will that you're married to this person. You should really try and stick it out. You make a mistake, you open your business in the wrong place, go somewhere else. You choose the wrong person, go somewhere else. It's not, this is the voice that called out 40 days, and therefore you have to put your heart and soul into it. You make a mistake.
So I think that at least 90%, it might even be 99%, but at least 90% of married people think they made a mistake. That's why it's very, very dangerous to say what you're saying. I think that the correct attitude has to be, this is who it's supposed to be, and this is who I'm going to make it work with. And I think any other attitude will almost invariably end up in divorce, because marriage by its own nature is hard. And when you're building with someone, it can become beautiful, but there's a lot of hardships that you have to contend with. And if you're not going to approach it with the attitude, this is what was meant to be, and I have to make it work, then I don't see how you could make it work. It doesn't go on autopilot. Even though logic would dictate what you're saying, but I don't think you could work with it.
I didn't give up overnight. I tried 20 years in a marriage and it didn't work. I would give up overnight.
Okay, I'm not, I don't think we could take a case-by-case analysis, but I'm saying as an attitude, I don't think we could mention such an attitude.
I would say that all this talk about a thought call 40 years before, and that it's meant to occur, but we have the free will to really mess up our own lives, and we do so more often than not.
So that deserves a separate discussion. Maimonides asks your question, and he has a very interesting answer, but that's Ezrat Hashem. We'll, if you want, on a Thursday night, or sign up on a one-on-one. We can get to that. Okay. There's one more question which we have to ask ourselves, and this is a question which, again, I think it's hard for a person to see the answer by themselves, and that is: are our goals realistic? Very often our expectations of our spouse, of ourselves, of our marriage aren't realistic. We'd like to see a life that way. We imagine that life could be that way. We want to wish, we wish that life could be that way, but it's not realistic. There's no such marriage. It can never happen. And very often, if you sit down and speak about what you would like to see happening here, you'll realize there's no way this can happen. I wouldn't be able to do what I'm expecting my spouse to do. And this is very, very common. And then people spend their marriage being very frustrated for no good reason. Because your compromise, again, is the compromise of life. It's not the compromise of my wife is less than she could be, my wife is less than I could have gotten. No, it's a matter of life, and this is one of the compromises of life. So, what's the solution to all this? We said attitude, attitude, attitude. You're the one that sets the tone, and the tone should be a tone of give, give, give. Accept and give. So, when the question comes up, who takes out the garbage? The answer is you. You'll ask me, who am I talking to? Whoever I'm talking to. If I talk to her, I'll tell her, you. If I'm talking to you, I'll tell you, you. Who does the diapers? You. Who does the dishes? You. If it's an issue, you lost. It shouldn't be an issue. I do whatever I can, she does whatever she can, and I don't go looking, hey, what's she doing? I'm looking at, what can I do? I'm going to do it. So the attitude, she's doing the best she can, and I'm lucky to have her, and she's the Mashiach. Remember the story of the priests. So don't go the route we began our class with, the Plotnik curse with the Plotnik diamond. It's very easy to go that route. You know, I got the Plotnik curse. You have to go the route of, I was zocher to marry the Mashiach. I was zocher to marry the greatest person. And if there's a flaw, if there's something that isn't perfect, well, it could have been me, it could have been her. So God chose it to be her, and I was spared. But at the end of the day, I'm fortunate to have her. And as I said before, she has a front seat waiting for her in the Garden of Eden. The question is, will I merit to sit next to her?